I think Baltimore still has a chance. The thing that I struggle with in Buffalo is when everything's scripted, that team seems to be okay. But when there it comes down to a fourth quarter where they have to make either an important play or an important decision by the coach, they always seem to dribble down their leg. So to me, Buffalo will always just hit that proverbial ceiling, and they can be the Charles Barkley to the Michael Jordan, unfortunately for Josh Allen.
That Doug Whaley clip. What an interesting way to put that. Dribble down their leg.
I mean, I guess it's a nice way to put it. A radio safe way to put it.
It is. The FCC was probably happy about that. But I know you and Zach Jones talked about this clip earlier this week.
But you can get your bit in on this.
I don't fully disagree with what he's saying. It's just an interesting vessel saying it.
Right.
Like that. Like Doug Whaley just emerging from the woodwork. I haven't heard his name since Brandon Bean was hired.
I still always look at this as, man, I just need one time. For them to break through past Kansas City to get rid of all of this.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a bigger discussion that has to be had, which is what happens if the Chiefs make it out of the AFC again?
And they easily can.
They're the team that threatens the Chiefs the most.
You know how we say it's the Bills division until it's not? It's the Chiefs conference until it's not, until proven otherwise.
Which
that's
is
just
tough
what it is.
And unfortunate. It's always discouraging, to say the least, to where, I don't know. I'm still along the lines of this. Could you do better, for example, than Sean McDermott? Maybe. But because I don't have a clear answer on that,
yeah,
it's kind of what scares me.
Well, let's just think about this for a second. Go through a couple names of who could possibly be out there. And this isn't us saying Sean McDermott should be replaced, because I don't think he should.
As a matter of fact, I'm trying to argue the other side of this of
Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, I'd rather have the devil I know than the devil I don't.
Right.
Because he has gotten better in the last couple of years.
There's definitely been growth.
In terms of that management, that sort of, you know, trying to make sure everyone is on the same page. You hear about the culture. Chase Claypool put up a post yesterday talking about the very brief time he was here in Buffalo and how he was working his way up.
There's part of me that kind of wishes that worked out and he didn't get injured, because
yeah.
I think that could have been pretty interesting.
That would have been really interesting.
Yeah. That's a big tight end style wide receiver. And that would have been, could he have made the team? It's just such a... It's a thing in my brain that's really, really cool.
If he was playing with a focused mind the way that he can.
The way that he seemed to be going through training camp, all of that.
The Bills probably don't throw a third round pick at Amari Cooper, quite honestly. Because Claypool is athletically talented enough that you have that type of player.
Yeah.
If that was actually all the case and he didn't get hurt, man, that would have been really fun.
Amari Cooper's still out there in free agency, right?
He's still unsigned.
Yeah.
Which I do think is wild. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
I get the outside perspective of, oh, you didn't do anything with Josh Allen as your quarterback. No. You joined midseason. That's hard to do.
And he was fighting through an injury that required surgery, but played through it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you join a team midseason, it's not a guarantee you're always going to pop off again. You don't know the playbook. You don't know what's going on.
That first touchdown, his arms were in the air. Tion Coleman's trying to tell him what to do.
Yeah.
The rookie.
Yeah, it's...
he had no idea. And then he ends up catching a touchdown. Yeah. It was just perfect. But it could... You see the
Coleman
Bills...
Coleman effectively directing traffic between quarterback and new wide receiver going, this is the play.
If you're a team like New England looking to add veteran wide receiver talent, his value, the longer he sits on the market... And
it's not a bad
after
thing.
Playing with the Bills for a season, and what he did here lowers his value a touch, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. It's not a slight on him. It's just the production he had definitely does. If you're New England, if you're Miami, if you are any other team in the AFC, why aren't you looking to sign him?
I don't even need an AFC team on this one. What about a Carolina?
Right. Get a veteran receiver in there other than Adam Thielen.
Because then you get another depth player in there to work with McMillan. To work with Leggett.
Yep, Xavier Leggett, absolutely. And a veteran talent for Bryce Young.
Exactly.
You've seen with Josh Allen, right? And yeah, Stephon Diggs is on the Patriots now. Ready? There was a whole saga there.
What about the Giants?
Yeah. With Malik Nabers, with Russell Wilson. Like, yes. But you've seen what a veteran wide receiver can do, and you can say whatever you want about Stephon Diggs. He is a huge part of why Josh Allen became the quarterback he is to this day.
I do find it weird, but, you know, like Amari Cooper being unsigned is, it is what it is. I just still found it surprising that all throughout free agency he was untouched.
That's what I...
And you heard nothing about him.
No, his name wasn't mentioned from any team, any analyst. Like, he's not popping up anywhere.
Right.
I only saw it because of an Instagram post from the NFL saying, guy's still out there. And I scrolled through because who else is out there? Washington Commanders last year. I'm blanking. Keenan Allen, he's still out there too.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's another option as well. But with the Bills, the wide receiver room this year, are you feeling better or worse? I'm feeling better. I think you have, with Josh Palmer, you have some upside. And I think Elijah Moore provides a lot more upside than a lot of people are giving credit for.
Yes. No, I think it's the amount, like, I might even say there might be too much credit being given to Elijah Moore right now.
You think so?
Yes.
I was kind of teetering for a while, and now I'm kind of in.
Everyone's pretty much in at this point. That's what this is.
Last year for the Browns, he had 61 receptions for 538 yards, a touchdown, average 8.8 yards per reception. And the year before that, I mean, it was pretty much the same, two touchdowns.
Right. And if he puts up similar numbers, like, that's great. That's exactly what you want from another depth signing.
Rotational wide receiver.
Yes.
Yes.
That's perfectly fine. It does sound like a lot of people are at the point where, like, they're expecting more than that from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because of the caliber of quarterback that he played with over these last couple of years, also actually probably throughout his entire career. And then you get a quarterback with the caliber of Josh Allen.
Well, and last year he had the Grim Reaper as his offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey. He ruins offenses. So
now the other part of this is this. Well, further than that, Deshaun Watson was the quarterback to start the year.
Yeah, the real Grim Reaper.
You want to talk about actual death to offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that these things are automatic. That's the other part. Like, maybe he is who he is, which is like a solid depth wide receiver, and that's perfectly fine. And if that is what it is, then it is what it is. Other than that, like, to the question though, do I feel better? Ultimately, I feel the same. The same being, they're a championship contender who has one red and yellow problem. That's it.
Yep, the red and yellow problem.
It's a red and yellow problem. That's it.
And that's what I've seen mostly, right? It's the look at last season. Josh Allen did the unthinkable. He won MVP with a room that was quote-unquote subpar to other rooms in the NFL. You add Amari Cooper in there for sure, and that bumped it up a little bit. But still, injuries, that wide receiver room was shifting, aside from Khalil Shakir, all season.
Even Shakir got hurt for a couple games.
Right, right. So it was
revolving
door.
A problem with their depth.
Well, that really did. That held the magnifying glass over him for sure. But now, I think they have a better core. I do like the upside of Elijah Moore, and I don't think he's going to have a super upside like some people do. But if he can replicate what he did in Cleveland even last year, and I think it's going to be more because of Josh Allen and the offense you're playing, and I think it's only going to promote more.
The offense that you're playing does have a role in this now. Think about it.
Well, that everybody eats.
Ex-receivers get a little less attention. Maybe that has to do with the quality of them. But since Joe Brady has taken over, why does Diggs want out? It's because the role is different now.
Yeah.
He's
not wide receiver one.
It's the ex receiver does not get as much attention. So, does that turn into, that's just what all these guys are going to do, is this similar type of production based on the offense that Joe Brady likes to utilize? Maybe.
Maybe. But I kind of like that, especially for the financial future of the team.
Because think about this, ready? When did Joe Brady start getting his shine?
LSU with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase.
And a trio of wide receivers that were a headache.
Yeah.
Not one of them shined more the other.
No. They were all dogs.
They were all guys that you had to get the football.
Mm-hmm.
Are we starting to see a trend here? All guys that you have to get the football? Everybody eats? That's just maybe what Joe Brady is.
Which is what we were excited about looking back when he first took over the job from Dorsey. I remember talking about this.
I was remembering it was about spacing concepts.
Spacing. That too.
Having two wide receivers constantly running into the same area to where DBs can read it. It's not a mistake that Allen had his career high in interceptions.
Right. Right. That, all that aside.
Oh my God. The haunting image of Gabe Davis running down the same sideline, doing the same route.
Yeah.
As Diggs, and then the ball gets picked. It's like, of course the safety read that.
See, we're looking back at a time. The Bills weren't always
this
good. They did.
They still pulled 11 wins out of their hat.
They did, because they went on a run with Joe Brady. But the whole thing, you look back at that, as soon as Brady came in, it was, oh, LSU,
balance
a few
it
seasons
out.
Back. Look at this. Look at what he did there.
But he balances it out.
Even in Carolina, he didn't get a fair shake because that team was in shambles already.
Oh, my God.
That was in trouble. So everybody worried about him. It was, oh, don't worry. He's coming into a competent organization now, not the Carolina Panthers organization.
Right.
As soon as he even unlocks James Cook in the run game, right? He's a big reason James Cook was under
Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
The guy who's like, yeah, we're going to play two quarterbacks in the same game.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Him and Mike Tomlin are in the same conversation because of that. Russ, you're out. Fields, you're in for a couple plays, then we're going to rotate you back.
Yep.
But
awful.
It's just Joe Brady's unlocking of this Bills offense has been huge. And I like it for the financial future of the team because in all seriousness, a group of guys like this, just fellas in the wide receiver room, not the big dogs, Allen can do anything with those guys, I feel like. And this season is going to be the true test of that and see if last season was a fluke or not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the financial future looks like, oh, we're investing in our quarterback, so we're going to be able to have a revolving door of receivers.
And if you have capable wide receivers,
yes,
capable pros, that's why I feel exactly the same. Like to answer your question ultimately,
mm-hmm,
about this team, my one actual worry,
okay,
about the Bills entirely here is this: their defense just got a lot younger,
very much so, but it needed to.
But sometimes that means you're not going to be firing out the gate that quick.
Right, you're going to take a step back.
You might be processing the speed of the National Football League.
I am still a little worried about the safety position as well,
which is fine to me. That's fine. It's okay if there are struggles from a Hairston, Jackson, Sanders, Walker,
mm-hmm,
even Bishop in his second year.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be surprised.
No.
Young players make mistakes. That's reality as long as they're talented enough to cover them up and make it a net positive.
Right.
Will it start that way? Maybe not.
It might be a slow burn for the start
of
the season.
And it's not a guarantee one way or another, but it's the one worry I have. Mm-hmm. Will the defense fire off the same way that it has in the past?
It's more of a concern than a worry because you know eventually...
Probably not.
They're going to.
They'll steady up.
Yeah.
But it might be, does this cost you, for example, the one seed?
Now, speaking, we were talking about Amari Cooper, free agency, right? Not going anywhere. There's still a Rasul Douglas on the market, on the open market. Could you ever see the Bills bringing him in as a veteran cornerback again, just on a cheaper contract
year? They already have veteran presences they signed. Dane Jackson, Tre'Davious White.
Yeah.
They already signed both of them.
But what, I mean, you might end up, Tre'Davious White, I think, has a chance of maybe not even making the team, depending on how he plays.
And the same with Jackson.
Right.
Those were contingencies on in case they didn't get the draft picks that they wanted. They got what they wanted. And that is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Am I worried about, you know, for example, like Tre White not looking like Tre White? No. Am I bracing myself for that potential of maybe Tre White does get released? Yeah. But does that really change my opinion on the defense? No. I suspect that might be a slow burn to get some of these rookies up to proper speed. and the fact that there are so many new faces on this team. Because it's also the D tackles, the D ends, the new signings, Bosa, Hoyt, Ogunjobi, your draft picks.
Ogunjobi, though, you're not going to – I wouldn't be surprised if there's a way they get out of that. You don't think so?
No, it does sound like he's really gotten a grasp of the playbook.
Oh, okay. When can he like stop practicing? When does he have to stop practicing? Training camp?
When the season begins.
Oh, so he can go the entire preseason.
He can go through the preseason. The Bills might not work as many reps to him because they need to be ready for week one.
Right, they got
to
get the young guys ready for week one.
They need to get these kids ready. So there may be a little bit less of a focus
and
on
same with Hoyt, those
Hoyt
two.
And Ogunjobi, knowing that there's going to be a six-game suspension.
Well, it's interesting. Like, we've talked about this. Hoyt, they clearly have a future vision for because they signed him for multiple years. Ogunjobi, if he has gotten a grasp of the playbook, that's great. But I did, at one point before this, when he first got announced to being suspended, like when that first started coming out, I foresaw them kind of moving away from that because he's only a one-year deal and he's only going to play a fraction of the season for you.
Yes, but I do think that if he's understanding the playbook, like he's probably going to be part of the D-tackle depth. And that's perfectly fine. I suspect that maybe with all these new faces, there might be a little bit of a hang on. We got to get everything connected and together again. And week one against the Ravens is certainly not the easiest task to do that. We'll see. It's my concern. It's my only concern. But it doesn't change anything about the outlook of the Buffalo Bills 2025, which is they're a contender for the one seed. They're a contender to go to the Super Bowl. They have this one ugly, consistent problem in the postseason of making Kansas City look like the best football team that they've ever faced.
Yeah.
Can you get past that? That'd be great. Even if you don't get past it and you get around it, say another team takes out Kansas City, for example, I'll take it. Break through the conference. Get there. Because it makes all the difference on how the league views you, but also how you can view yourself. Knowing we finally got there.
Yeah. And like just to, you know, go back to what you said in the beginning, it really is one win against them in the playoffs and that's it. All that noise just goes away.
Because then you look at a team that when you look at all games played against each other within these within this era,
it's 50-50.
They're very even.
Yeah. And the playoff wins, Buffalo's finally on the other side of at that point.
That's all you need. Flip one. And you can get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Flip one, and you change the narrative.
It is unbelievable how close the narrative actually is.
Because all those games outside of 2020 when they weren't ready yet.
Well, yeah, clearly they weren't.
Because they lost twice to the Chiefs that year, oddly enough. But ever since they've shown that they arrived, they've been on the Chiefs' heels in every playoff game. Including a couple of classics where you're like, it's a shame that one team has to lose. The one that you felt the most uneasy about is the one that, oddly enough, was played here in the playoffs. Because that was Tyler Bass just like, all right, go kick this thing to try to tie it and give Mahomes like a minute and a half to go ahead and win the game. Have fun. Bass's inaccuracy that year led us to kind of cut that potential misery out early.
Mm-hmm.
Like the doom and gloom, sure. Like I don't need any more. I'm cool. Thank you for that. Thanks for putting us out of our misery on that one. But even Bass rebounded.
He did. And it took a while.
That Miami
he finally got his
shot.
Confidence back. That Miami shot, you're right. That did it.
60-yarder against Miami to end the game, win it, does a lot for a player's confidence.
Yeah.
And I could not have been happier for him. Because that was a no-doubter, too. From 60.
I went
60.
Right through. Yeah.
That ball left his foot, and I'm like, oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. You knew it. There was no question. And, you know, in the big moments, you have more confidence in him. He has more confidence in himself. That makes all the difference.
Exactly. And that's, again, why I'm relatively unchanged on the Buffalo Bills. How confident are you that they are from where they are last year to where they are this year? And I'm going to say they are the same. It is static.
And that's kind of why it's been so hockey heavy this offseason, because it's just the same old story again with the Bills, I feel
well,
like.
Well, I'm going to do something with you in the next segment, and that's we're going to flip the question around.
Okay.
Which is, are the Buffalo Sabres a better team now than they were last year?
Oh,
and we'll talk more about that coming up next.
He's a top pairing guy. He's a power play guy. I think that's why most teams have explored the interest in Bo Byram. And this is where, again, and I you know, he's a restricted free agent. He's not an unrestricted free agent, but Darren Ferris is the agent here. You know, he doesn't mind spinning the Ferris wheel, and he does it with a lot of his guys. And he's looking at it. He's, all right, well, you know, Byram's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. He has arbitration rights. If he goes to ARB and you have him for one more year, I'm sure the message to Kevin Adams is you lose your leverage.
Talk about low-hanging fruit.
The Ferris wheel. That from Darren Dreger, which the arbitration is a way that you can end up at. Like, I don't know how it works exactly when it comes to arbitration, but he's still only a UFA in 2 years.
Okay.
But it has happened before. Mark Stone, infamously, with Ottawa. They go to arbitration with him, and suddenly he's only 1 year to UFA.
Hmm.
So a ruling could change things. It's not very common, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's capable of happening here with Byram. But, Joe, last segment, you had asked about, how do you feel about the Buffalo Bills? Are they better than they were last year? And I think that my answer was relatively the same. And I'm pretty sure that's where you got yourself to as well.
Yeah, if not a smidge better, more confidence in the wide receiver room than going into last year with Mac Hollins and those guys we had.
Exactly. So now, though, with that question to ask about the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
And how things look on the roster as of right now. There is a question that has to be asked. Are they currently better than they were last year in terms of roster makeup and construction?
No. You have a flaming hole still sitting there in J.J. Paterka that has not been filled. That's where I lose it. Yes, defensively you have gotten better, but you have not replaced J.J. Paterka by any means. And I get it. Paterka wasn't crazy good.
He was still a good player. He was a
very good player. You need to replace him with another good player.
Had as many points as the top free agent in the class.
Yeah. Yeah. But you need to replace him with another player of that caliber to be at the same level, in my opinion. Or multiple players to kind of fill in that void.
Now, ready?
That trade.
Say the ideal happens with St. Louis.
Okay.
Like, the idea I come up with of Neighbors and Justin Falk coming back, okay? What does that change? Is Neighbors guaranteed a top six spot?
I don't know.
Holloway would be. But, for example, if that's the return, if it's Neighbors and Falk, for example, does that really fix a lot? Does that really make things better? So I'm going to look at the roster as is right now. You keep Byram into the season.
Okay.
Okay? Let's go over what line projections probably would look like. Top line, you're probably looking at, and I'm sorry for everybody's ears. Probably looking at Josh Norris centering Tage Thompson, and I would imagine Jack Quinn.
Yeah.
If it's not Norris on the top line, it's Kulik, because he played really well with Thompson last year.
He did. Those two played really well together.
They played really well together.
I think I'd feel better with Kulik just starting in the top line. You know, we haven't seen Norris to his full potential because of injury, but
you could work with what's working, which is Kulik worked with Thompson really well last year.
It's kind of like if you keep Byram. It's a similar premise to playing with Dahlin, what works.
But I also have zero problem putting Kulik on a line with Alex Tuck and Jason Zucker. Zero problems with that. I have no reservations. So your top six probably, as of right now, based on what Quinn got paid, they might have visions of this being a bridge deal where he gets back and finds his form.
I could see that.
And that's the thing, is that Jack Quinn did kind of find his form a little bit toward the end of last year.
Finally.
Considering how his season started, how dreadful he was.
It was bad.
He finished the year with 39 points in 74 games. That's half a point a game. How?
He turned and burned at one point in the season. That's what happened.
That he did have himself a really hot area near the deadline. Maybe he becomes a sellable asset sort of thing. But he started ice cold to begin the year. So Quinn's probably in your top six as of right now, with Kulik, Thompson, Zucker, Norris, Tuck. Put them in the order or the combinations, however you want them. But that's your top six as of right now. I might even say, Isaac Rosén, here's your chance to try to beat out Jack Quinn for a left wing spot.
That could be interesting.
Your bottom six looks like this. And you're probably going to sound a lot more comfortable about this.
Okay.
Benson, McLeod, Doan, Greenway, Krebs, Malenstein.
That is...
rearrange it however you need to. But that's probably what the bottom six looks like.
Yeah.
With the idea of Justin Danforth or Tyler Kozak.
I do feel more comfortable about the bottom six. But to me, the toughest part, and I know we were talking about hypotheticals with the Blues, everything like that.
Tyson Kozak. I don't know why I said Tyler.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice. Myself, I heard Ty Kozak, and that's all I heard.
I actually I stopped myself, and I got mad for a moment. So Kozak's probably a player rotating in. He's probably 13th forward right now. I do think that he's earned it. But Danforth and Kozak probably are your guys rotating in there. Seeing if Oslin finds a way into his way, trying to find a third line spot, for example.
Yeah. It's tough for me to look at this.
But your bottom six, you look at and you go, I think this is fine.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But the top six is where I struggle. And not because of just the J.J. Paterka hole, but in general... what the conversation, the discourse we had last year was Thompson's a star. The rest of the guys they're good. They're goal scorers. We have a lot of goal scorers. We don't have a superstar in the top six right now.
I would say Thompson probably threatens that.
He threatens it at this point, but we don't have a bonafide, I don't know what the right way to say that is, superstar. And I get it. You weren't going to get Mitch Marner here. He was going to play in Vegas because they're a cup contender. They're going to, especially now, make a run.
But also Vegas did their diligence of, we're going to make sure that he doesn't even hit the open market.
Yeah, and they just do that, though. They sell all their futures away and prospects away
didn't have to here. It was Nicolas Waugh.
Oh, right, yeah. But I'm saying in general, that's just how they operate.
But they are an aggressive team, yes.
They're very aggressive and just get guys who can play now. They don't deal with the draft picks, the futures, anything like that. They sell all their draft picks away. But the Sabres... we had the number one prospect pool in the NHL a couple years ago. The prospect pool has diminished quite a bit, right? Cousins is gone. The kid line is no more. I don't know. It's I think you needed a bigger move than what you got from Paterka.
And again, we're not done yet because Byram is still the piece there. But now, ready? Say they have Byram starting into the season, right? Your defensive core looks like this. Dahlin, Byram, trade pending. Power, Kesserling. Samuelson, Connor Timmins. Jacob Bryson, Zach Jones, Ryan Johnson, all working to try to be your seventh defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a lot better about that.
Yeah. The defense is definitely, that's my strongest part of this period we are in right now. after free agency, after the draft, especially seeing in the draft, and we were talking about this during our draft coverage a couple weeks ago now, or was that last week? That might have been last week. Just how right shot defensemen were coming down the pipeline. They're big. The defense is their strongest part right now, I Correct. Would say. Especially with Byram still on the team, being able to place him with Dahlin, like we've said. It's the top six for me. That's it. But I think they're better than last season?
Ready? Even goaltender now.
I like Alex Lyon. Lukanen, I do like
Alex
that.
Alex Lyon and Devin Levi.
Is Levi staying in Rochester now? Is that what's going
to
happen?
That signing tells me that he's starting in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the proper way to go.
We talked about that with Paul, too. He should stay probably another year.
And he should stay another year. But the thing is that Alex Lyon is a good enough goaltender that it'll help keep him down. Unless there's injury. That's the only reason you call up Levi at this point is for injury.
Yeah.
But you let him be the guy in Rochester. You let him start there. You let him finish there. And you let a couple of kids battle it out to be his backup. Tobias Leonen. Scott Ratzlaff. See if one of them can latch on as the backup in Rochester.
Yeah. The goaltending, though, the Alex Lyon signing, I'm happy about. Do you think he has... Okay. The consensus is he's not a starter, right? Like, that's kind of what I've seen. Like, he's played top NHL minutes before in net, but
Lukanen
would still be our number one.
Lyon's a spot starter.
Okay.
A guy that you can give a couple of games in a row and he can at least try to hold the tide over for you. He's a guy that you could rely on as a backup goaltender to be the guy to help kind of keep things going for you.
He was with the Panthers for a good stretch, right?
But that's also, it was the last years with the Red Wings. He only has 1 year with Florida.
1 year with Florida, that's right.
But it was really good.
That was the year they lost in the Stanley Cup final, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But he helps them get to the playoffs.
I remember that.
Playoff Bob does not exist without Alex Lyon's work.
You're absolutely
including
right.
Including against Buffalo.
Yeah, because that was the 1 point out year.
Yes.
That's right.
But with the Red Wings, 44 and 30 are the games played. Better 2 years ago than last year. Obviously, it's going to be, in terms of save percentage, better. But in terms of goals against average, last year was actually better. He did play less games, though. He did have an injury. It's a good value for a player that you could probably get something decent out of him here. For the longest time, he was trying to get through the Flyer system. You know, before Carter Hart was removed from the team for being a gross person. So he wouldn't really crack through, though. But it's these last 3 years that he's been a little bit more into the spotlight here of being an NHL goaltender. Could it be another Eric Comrie where it looks like a good idea and then it ultimately turns out it's not? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe then there can be changes to the coaching staff. If every goalie that comes in here plays worse.
If it's a declining thing. I don't know. Eric Comrie, you're right, though, did seem like a good deal when he first came around and then just fell flat on his face in Buffalo. I hope Alex Lyon works out, though, because I really would like to see Levi really take another season in Rochester. I think that would be huge for him. So, especially, with Levi, I don't know how you feel. He entered... Not cocky. I don't know what the right word is. Like, he was the best goaltender in college hockey, right? Without a question.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in with that chip on your shoulder, there's a big jump to NHL talent, and you know that more than anybody. Like, there's a huge jump.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ready for it, and I think he thought he was ready for it. And we kind of saw that confidence bite him in the butt a little bit.
Right.
To where now... I don't want to say humbled because he really wasn't that. He wasn't a problem. He wasn't like Jack Eichel. You know what I'm saying? Like,
let's not create something that's not there.
Oh, I'm not trying to. I'm just saying, like, the Rochester just coming up through the ranks is better off than just throwing
right into
the NHL. For his
progression, it was probably better to start him out in Rochester all along.
Yeah.
I look at Dustin Wolf in Calgary.
But that's like, I think that was Adams kind of wanting to see his goalie prospect just enter right in and go.
Yes.
Kind of a deal. I think that's the only reason he was in the NHL in general and not starting in the AHL.
Well, also it was, you wanted to see what you got, but also when Levi stepped in here in the midst of a playoff push, he played well.
He did. It wasn't until...
It's actually been his best tenure as a Sabre.
Yeah.
Was the playoff push to end the year.
Yeah.
Ironically enough.
The season after is where he kind of faltered.
So you can tell there's like ice in his veins type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Also because their goaltending was bad.
That was that he was a shining spot in a bad goaltending area. That
three seasons ago is the we'll beat you 7-6.
Yeah. Well, offense. Nothing.
And Levi looked like the best of all three of them that year because, well, that team was incredibly ice tilty in terms of let's go get the goals. We've got to beat you. You can score four on us, but we're going to punch you in the mouth for five.
It sounds like they're going back to a different, like, they're going away from the offensive scoring, though. Just the way they drafted, the way they, you know, the trade return.
It does seem like it, and the thing about that is that you need to have some kind of balance to it.
Right.
You don't need to overcorrect it the way that they did.
No, they went stark contrast the year after and totally blew up in their
that's
face.
That's what we call an overcorrection.
Yeah, yeah.
Don Granato. His last year here was we want to be tighter defensively, and then they just couldn't do anything.
Right, they lost all scoring.
But hey, Luukkonen was fantastic that year.
Right, he came out of nowhere. The hot and cold goalie was hot for a huge stretch. Played a majority of the games. Yeah,
whole year he was hot.
Yes, and then this past season,
what did it cost? Everything. And this past season, they get back to scoring goals again, and
Luukkonen's cooler.
The goaltending helps cost you games. Say it as it is. So, ultimately, do you feel better about the Sabres right now than they were last year?
No. Until another addition is made or Byram is sent away.
I need to, and the answer to that for me is, I need to know what the return is on a potential Byram trade.
Yeah.
But if they were to start the year with this as the club.
Do you think?
I don't feel better or worse about them. The problem with not feeling better or worse about them is they were not a playoff team last year.
Yeah, right. You're not. There's no
when
expectation.
When I say that about the Bills, that is because they are one of the top five teams in the league regularly.
Right, they pushed for the Super Bowl. They made the AFC Championship last year.
Me saying that I'm a net neutral on the Bills means that they're going to be fine and they're great and exactly what they're supposed to be. Me saying net neutral on the Sabres...
It means you're not in the playoffs again.
Means you are going to year 15.
Yeah.
And I don't want that.
No.
And it's still pending what happens as per Bo Byram.
And like we've said, that could be in August. That could be in a week. That could be today. Anything.
Could be anything.
You don't know.
It could be game number 7 in the National Hockey League season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just hockey's so interesting to me how the offseason works compared to the NFL offseason, just the RFAs, the no move clauses, all that stuff. It's just really intriguing.
Your quick little programming note, Alex Brasky will join us at 1 o'clock. There was some stuff going on, a little miscommunication on my end, but we got him ready for 1 o'clock.
Awesome.
So, Alex Brasky of Bills Digest joining us at the top of the hour here. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, here with you on a beautiful, long weekend. Thanks for listening with us if you're here on WGR.
It'll be good to catch up with Alex Brasky of Bills Digest coming up here at the top of the hour.
And we made an oversight for Booty Cheek of the Week. So here's an extended version of that segment, kind of.
Oh, boy.
I forgot about this, mostly because I was back at Harbor Center and getting looked at by a trainer.
Yes.
But also, during round one, I was playing that night.
Yes.
So I watched zero of the draft.
Mm-hmm. I unfortunately watched
it. From what I heard from everybody is thank goodness I was playing hockey.
Yeah, it was really bad. It was legitimately some of the worst sports television I've ever watched.
That was dreadful to even look at the pictures of it.
You should have heard Paul Hamilton on our draft coverage on Saturday. I asked him about it. I was like, Paul, there's no drone there. Like, what do you think of the decentralization? He's like, if you watched last night, it just went into it. Like,
yep.
Because I just hated, you know, in the NFL draft, that's a decentralized draft that does it 100% right. And for the NHL not to look at that and be like, this
they
is what we should be doing.
They don't have the money the NFL does. Let's be entirely
their
clear
production
about that.
Was probably more expensive with it the was. Opening chamber into Palpatine's throne room and walking him in there.
No, no, no.
The coaches look terrified. They don't want to say anything.
That was the Matrix.
Yeah. Well, did you see even the Sabres?
Which one was the second one? Because that's the one I'm thinking of, like the guy with the 80 million televisions, and then Neo is yelling at Neo, who's yelling at Neo,
yes,
who's yelling at
yeah.
Neo. Like, that's what that was.
But these coaches and front office staff didn't even look like they wanted to be a part of this.
No.
These phone calls, these conversations, normally happen off the air. They're phone calls.
Oh, yeah, no.
Now you're putting them out onto the air and making them say something to the prospect's face?
First of all, I'm perfectly fine with making NHL coaches and management uncomfortable with having to actually do something called talk.
Well, yeah.
Get used to it. It's what you're
I forget
to do.
Who it was specifically.
I mean, what you're supposed to do.
There was one, I forget who it was. Evan, you might know. There was one that was like really bad. Like someone wasn't even blinking. Like they were just looking at the camera. I forget who it was.
Round one was a literal nightmare. I was on the board. I was just producing. And it's not only did it take long because of how like, It said 3 minutes on the clock, but it really wasn't actually 3 minutes.
They didn't have a clock on
now,
day two. They completely forgot that.
Well, I will say I do kind of wish that the Sabres had taken McQueen, but...
The draft
but
itself, I don't yeah. care
no,
about
No, I didn't care about that either, but the presentation was awful.
Yeah.
It was dreadful.
Not good, and they
glad
should learn
I was,
from it. Owen did the math
it.
On day two. He's like, if they keep it up, and this is what happens...
With every pick,
27 hours we're going to be sitting here.
Gross.
He said that. I was like, well, we got Sports Thunder, we got a radiothon basically
that would,
happening
that would
now.
Be
but,
so gross.
And then no pick was made for 25 minutes into or 17-ish minutes, something like
oh
that,
my God.
Into the second round. I was like, well, we're on pace for 46 now. We just got doubled.
Oh boy,
that's but yeah,
dreadful.
Not great, dreadful. Not great. And they should learn from it and never do that again.
All right. Well, we had to dunk on the NHL draft presentation. Had to do it because sometimes that's what heroes do.